the next session is with Amy from Nominec, and Amy's going to be talking about the DNS fund, which is currently in its pilot. Over to you.
Thank you so much. Hi, everyone. It's so nice to meet you all. And I want to thank the DevRoom facilitators for bringing everyone together. I hear that last year it was in a much smaller room, so we're going up in the world. We've got a bigger room this year. So I'm here today to talk to you a bit about the Nominec DNS Fund. It's very much got my learning hat on, coming to you with humility, because I really want to hear from you about what you think and how we can improve, because we're very, very early days. So forgive our bumps and mistakes, but that's what we're here for, right? Is to learn and improve and say what we haven't got right. So I work for Nominec. We run the .uk registry and a number of other TLDs, top-level domains. And as part of that, we are a public benefit company. So it's part of our articles of association that we can't make profit in a traditional way. And that means that we give a lot of our excess from selling domains to public benefit causes. Now, traditionally, my role has looked at things like digital skills, online safety, but we've been really trying to listen to our community. And this year, last year, 2025, for the first time, we were really delighted to enter a new space and start funding open source DNS projects. So as I say, it's relatively new for us. But it's quite interesting to then think about, you know, how that's come about and what our personal incentives are as well. So where did we start with all of this? Well, it tracks back to even before I had my child, who turned 3 last week. And we did some research in 2022 with this amazing organization called Demos. They're an awesome think tank in the UK. And they set out to help us craft the question, what is it that we're trying to influence? What is it that we're trying to do? And it's really, what should Nominec focus our investment on to support the technology ecosystem that underpins internet infrastructure? And once we've got a handle over that question and we've got a bit of focus, what funding model should we use? So we set out and asked this question of, you can tell a little bit of who ended up having a say in this. Our staff and our members, and overwhelmingly those people were saying, look, don't try and do lots of the shiny things, don't do lots of new and innovative things, look at what's existing, look at the maintenance of what is out there. The other thing that they said, and this graph isn't stacked because you could answer multiple to this question, you can really see overwhelmingly our members in particular, so those are people that work with us that buy domains and resell domains in their own work. They said work with open source communities. And you can see a couple of quotes up there. The investing profits in open source with a focus on human rights. Seriously, nothing else. We also did a massive landscape map. So we sought to really understand other funders, government actors, who in the DNS was operating. What sort of projects we might expect to go out there, identifying different actors and players, and where we might have a role and where we might have a niche. And I just absolutely love this quote, which comes from an expert advisor, on how when we look at who is maintaining and who's paid to maintain open source, often when that's at the behest of profit, the motivations are going to steer them towards those profit-driven motivations. So, you know, I think it's really powerful to think about those motivations and think where there might be pots of funding or actors that could be looking at it with a different lens. And where did that research kind of lead us? What were the main findings? And I'd love to hear, actually I'm going to ask you, whether you think these are right or whether you think there's more to it. But this is from all of this mapping, lots of interviews with staff members and those in the open source community about the pre-existing funding in open source. So the first one being that the majority of funding stems from corporates, not foundations, and that can bias development. Second being single source funding, so you get one funder wants to just take credit for one project as opposed to pooling funds, and something that Nick Gates was talking about earlier with joining up lots of funds. And thirdly, funding not being available for individuals, only projects. Does that sound familiar? People nodding? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, do shout out and I can repeat what you say if you think of anything else. But this is what it found. And I think it's interesting because we identified these problems, but I'm not going to say that automatically we were able to resolve them, right? Because we weren't. We've made mistakes. We've got problems, and we've got challenges to reaching these. So, you know, the second problem here in particular about having one funder, one project. We have tried to reach out to other funders and combine and work, but it's not always easy. And sometimes when you do work for an organisation like mine, they do want to have their name associated with it so that they can sort of celebrate and say what they're doing. This third problem in particular has been a real challenge for us, and I'm just going to share a little anecdote about taking this finding back into our organisation. So as you can imagine, we had to set up lots of conversations with our lawyers, with our financial controllers, to think about what it looks like to actually fund not just well-established large organisations, but some of those smaller individuals that are just the unsung heroes of keeping the internet as we know it alive. And it was really hard because actually, you know, for financial tax audit reasons, they were saying to me, well, no, actually, you've got to be a registered entity. You've got to have a name. You've got to have an address. You can't just fund Joe Blog off the streets. But I went through this process, and actually there are two in our portfolio that are individual maintainers and don't have an organisation. We've been supporting them to register. And actually my financial controller said to me, look, Amy, look at your portfolio of the people you're funding. Actually, you've got to make sure you get that balance right. You've got to make sure that this is about funding those maintainers and those individuals. So it really was a case of going back to the principles of what we were doing, who we're setting out to fund, and relying on this research to make sure that we were responding to that need. So where did we end up? What did we do last year? Now, I feel a little bit embarrassed, honestly, to share the amount of money here. It's 370k in pounds, which is about 430,000 euros. So it really isn't a lot of money that we're talking about here. But we're seeing this as somewhat of a pilot. We want to see how it lands amongst you, the community, with our members, with our stakeholders, what the perceptions are of a fund like this. And certainly we're hoping to at least double this in the next year. One of the big things coming out of the research was longevity of funds. So I would love to imagine being able to award three-year funding, which we've been able to do with previous grants in our Countering Online Harms portfolio. But at the moment, we've just been giving these one-off fundings. But that, if that's, you know, strong feedback, that is about relying on that fund moving forward, then I think that is something important for us to make the case to our board to get 3 years' worth of sign-off, not just one. And really, we landed on something that felt right in terms of the fund itself and what we were setting out to achieve. So it's all about funding and improving the security, sustainability, and resilience of DNS open source projects. And that's been really critical because when we looked at all the applications, it was something we did come back to. Had to be open source and had to be in the development of DNS, not just using DNS. And that's helped us stay really true and transparent to what we set out and our objectives. And so how did we do this? Well, firstly, yes, of course, we have some expertise, but we have our own biases as Nominet. We have our own preferences of different platforms. We have our own technical experts. So while the panel that we formed was designed to make sure we were really listening to the experts that had a better horizon scan and a map of the community, we made sure that we were bringing in our knowledge, but also really listening externally. So you can recognize two of these amazing panelists who are sat in the front row over here. So we've got Kaylin and Mirko, who really were fantastic in just bringing your knowledge and steering us in the right way, not just in who we selected, but also in how we set up the fund to try to realize what it means to be transparent and how we could really understand what's needed. I think something I'm very conscious of is this uncomfortable realization of power, who has power, who makes decisions, how those decisions get made. So one mitigating step you can do, I think, is to build an advisory panel like this. And we took a lot of learning from the Sovereign Tech Agency from that perspective as well. We also tried to be really principles focused, so be transparent in what we were looking for, what questions we'd be asking, how we would be making those selections, and sharing those out there. So actually, I'm going to pause for a moment and invite you to have a little read. So we've got 5 main criteria about public benefit. It's about securing critical infrastructure and what impact that would have on society if it broke down. The need that it represents in terms of resilient operation of the global DNS. We were really looking for proven use. This is really important to us, that we weren't setting out to fund shiny new infrastructure. It was actually about things that maintainers that are already doing the work, that are already underfunded, that are already in the ecosystem and have a proven reputation. So